Hey, I'm John.
And I'm Becky.
And this is the We Are For Good podcast.
Nonprofits are faced with more challenges to accomplish their missions and the growing pressure to do more, raise more, and be more for the causes that improve our world.
We're here to learn with you from some of the best in the industry, bringing the most innovative ideas, inspirational stories, all to create an impact uprising.
So welcome to the good community. We're nonprofit professionals, philanthropists, world changers, and rabid fans who are striving to bring a little more goodness into the world.
So let's get started.
Howdy, Becky. What's happening?
You just thought you knew about AI. I mean, we just came off the most incredible week, AI week, and fundraising here on the podcast. And then who walks into our house? Could it be possibly the two most aforementioned experts on AI? Y'all buckle up because we got Eric and Justin in the house today. It is our complete and total delight to introduce Eric Arnold and Justin Spielhag. They are the force over at Microsoft and the Tech for Social Good. And today we are going to be talking about AI for good. And Microsoft is really building just an incredible movement in this technology for social impact. They've committed more than $5 billion to help roughly 325,000 nonprofit and humanitarian orgs. They're delivering relevant, affordable, and innovative cloud solutions. They're helping us, y'all, tackle the world's biggest challenges. And we don't want you to be scared in this moment because Eric and Justin are going to take your hand and they're going to tell you how AI can be a force for good. So I'm going to back it up and I'm going to introduce Justin first. He is the Vice President and Global Head at Tech for Social Impact. And he's bringing 25 years of experience spanning commercial, social businesses. And prior to this current role, Justin served as the Chief Marketing and Operations Officer for Microsoft Asia Pacific. John, like, what is our life right now that we are interviewing these two humans? But he was spending over 7 years of his career working across developed and emerging Asian markets and just incredible human. We're so excited to hear his story. And Eric Arnold is the Chief Technology Officer for Tech for Social Impact. He joined Microsoft in 2017 as the Chief Technology Officer, and he's leading Microsoft Engineering Product Strategy for Nonprofits and the United Nations Casual. Prior to Microsoft, Eric served 9 years as the CIO over at Path. We love Path. Path International, it's a nonprofit focused on global health, and 15 years over at a privately held Bill Gates startup, which is probably a story in of itself. Y'all, AI is here. We are ready to embrace it. We know that it is not only going to help us connect and work smarter, not harder, and we don't want you to fear it. And we have these two incredible gentlemen who are going to take your hands, lead you through it. Eric, Justin, so excited that you're here. Thanks for coming to the We Are For Good podcast. Welcome.
Thank you, Becky and John. It's great to be here and look forward to this discussion.
Eric's even repping like every part of his clothing is Tech for Social Impact. So get on YouTube and go check it out. And we don't start any of our conversations here without actually getting to know the human. And so we're going to make you take us back a little bit. And Eric, I'm going to start with you. We want to know about like where you grew up and who was little Eric and how did he find his way into this tech for good sort of movement?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a small town in Washington State, and how I got engaged in the social impact sector is because I was a beneficiary. My mom was relatively poor. We were on food stamps. And so, you know, I was in food banks, I was in kitchens, and pretty early on learned how to give back and what it meant to have local organizations, small organizations in small communities that were providing services for people in need.
That was the most succinct, powerful elevator speech about somebody's upbringing to their career.
Thank you for sharing that.
You're honoring your mom with this work. Thank you so much. What about you, Justin?
Well, it all comes back to moms, doesn't it?
Right.
So, I have a similar story. My mother is a child of protective services investigator in Seattle, Washington. My father built a small nonprofit, which has now turned into a larger nonprofit, which is Senior Services for Snohomish County. And, you know, as two social workers, they didn't have a ton of money. And so they threw me in the back of the car when they got the page, or they threw me in the back of the bus when they needed to do the Meals on Wheels work. And so through sort of osmosis, I learned the value of service. My mom had an incredible run, an incredible career. Unfortunately, my father's was cut short by mental illness, and it kind of compelled me to focus on finishing maybe part of my family's work that needed to be done, and also to express service in and through my work.
Oh, that's incredible. Gosh. Legacy building. John, before you jump in on the first question, we got to name the moms here. Let's give the moms a shout out. Give us their names, guys.
Barbara.
And Terry.
Barbara and Terry. Oh, good women.
I'm raising my iced coffee to them right now as we dive into this. But I mean, thank you both for your vulnerability. I think it's easy to hear Microsoft Tech for Good, these billion huge numbers, and forget that it's like powered by humans with stories that are so connected into that. So thank you for being vulnerable enough to take us into those places today. So I want to hear about, let's set some tone and tell us about Microsoft Tech for Social Impact. Like, what's the scope of your work and mission?
Yeah, you know, and I'll just say one note, John, everybody in Tech for Social Impact has their own story, and it's what makes the team so special. They're all a great group of people with a very mission-driven attitude. But when we look at the Tech for Social Impact business, we really look at the nonprofit and IGO industry, so the UN entities, the development banks. There's 10 to 12 million of these organizations worldwide, and they, in the United States, as an example, command over $2 trillion in total revenues. It's a big, big sector doing incredibly important work in every one of our communities, from delivering health services to global aid to working on conservation. And they, like every other industry, need technology to accelerate their missions and to have a greater impact and to operate efficiently and effectively. So that's why we created the Tech for Social Impact team, was to really treat that industry as a first-class industry that needs the same cutting-edge technology that every other industry does. And we did that in a unique way, though. We brought together both affordable offers. You mentioned, I think you mentioned $5 billion. We'll do $3.9 billion of discounts and donations per year. Supporting 325,000 organizations. So affordability is a big part of our strategy, so that nonprofits have access. Eric leads technology, so we build specific patterns and solutions for critical processes like fundraising and program delivery. We brought together a capacity building team that would focus on raising and elevating the skills of nonprofits, so they could use and apply this technology to mission. And we work with partners like TechSoup to do that. We brought together commercial resources, account management, partner resources into one integrated team that is based on a social business construct. And so ultimately, the way we run this business is as a social business, where we reinvest a portion of our incremental proceeds back into public good initiatives like digital skilling for excluded communities, like AI for Good and many other topics. And that's unique and keeps us oriented, I think, in the same way that nonprofits are in the way that we serve the sector.
Wow. I mean, just some casual numbers there. and I really think you're right, John. It's easy to gloss over the numbers, but when you think about $3.9 billion being invested in a nonprofit, and I think about the systemic issues that would hit. And without the tech, and let me tell you, we've seen some scary tech in our world, and there are still nonprofits out there who are on shoestring budgets working off a database of Excel. And it's just so gracious. And we really appreciate that, all that you're doing. And I just think the AI conversation is just booming. And if you're tired of hearing these conversations on the podcast, well, sorry, not sorry, because this wave is upon us. And it's something that we feel very passionately about embracing, because we don't want to be left behind. And we want to be completely in tune to where's the world going? How do we connect with people who are really passionate about our mission? So I want you to talk just a little bit about some tone setting around this topic, because AI is one of the most widely discussed topics in technology today. It's embedded in almost everything we do. It's in our workflows. It's embedded in data. Whether you like it or not, it is here. So if you can just talk to us about where are you at right now, give us some stats and what opportunity exists in particular for nonprofits today. And if you're feeling generous, like throw in some stuff that we're not doing that we should be doing.
Yeah, I think we're going to get through that in the discussion. You know, it's funny is 25 years ago when I started my career at Microsoft, it was on an AI project. It was on machine learning to optimize certain things we were doing in our supply chain. So AI has been around for a long, long time, and we've been using it, and it's been incrementally improving. But what's been breathtaking and surprising, I think, for many of us has been the speed at which foundational models or language models or what is known as GPT has really come to the fore, and the very unique problems that it's able to solve. Just in a matter of days, when we launched Bing Chat, we saw over 400,000 nonprofit users working with Bing Chat to do everything from, you know, drafting initial donor proposals to analyzing grants. And so it is actually getting a lot of adoption, and there is a lot of speed. But we've got to kind of gone through this hype cycle, right, where AI was first going to save the world then it was going to destroy the world. And I think
we all have whiplash. Yeah. Yes, all of it.
And I think people are now kind of in the stage of like, well, how do we use it usefully? And so as we go through this conversation, I think we're going to highlight some of the ways that we think AI can really make an impact in fundraising, in donor engagement, in delivering missions. But it's here, right? And it's powerful. And there's a lot of capability.
Yeah, but Becky, you're exactly right. Like, you can't stop the tide, right? Not just Microsoft, but many technology companies are really taking advantage of these large language models in this moment that we have. And we talk about, I think it's The Sun Also Rising, the Hemingway quote around, how did you go bankrupt gradually, then suddenly? That's how we're experiencing AI, right? We spent years where AI was really the purview of, really well-funded projects with data scientists and big data solving big problems. You saw these lighthouse projects, here and there. And then GPT came along last November, and it's everywhere. It's really democratized the access to AI in productivity tools we use every day. And, guarantee you, if you're a nonprofit thinking about using AI, you're already using AI. Big Chat Enterprise or experimenting with it in other places.
I mean, let's double click. I love all this tone setting that we're doing. Let's double click into what is the impact specifically on fundraising, on donor engagement, and then program effectiveness that y'all are seeing?
Yeah. I mean, I think first of all, just with fundraising over the last 5 to 10 years, we've seen some real shifts in how fundraising is happening. Like we've all kind of know some of the generational shifts that are happening. And then with COVID lockdown, that really forced, different ways of giving. And it's challenging for nonprofit organizations, for fundraisers to adjust rapidly to some of these. And so I think, it's opened up opportunities to create new data partnerships. It's opened up opportunities to use AI with existing fundraising data to do things like thinking about more personalized engagement, thinking about better campaign management, thinking about how to apply giving trend data together with the data that you have in your own systems, whether that's in an Excel database or whether that's in a CRM system. And so I think the practical application of AI that we're seeing right now, I'm actually seeing more activity in the fundraising space more rapidly than I'm seeing in the program delivery space. It's happening in both areas, but I think everyone is recognizing, first of all, every nonprofit fundraises. And so it's kind of a natural place for all of us to go. But it's been really interesting to see some of the partnership conversations that have come up. We're, as Microsoft, a huge believer in having open standards, interoperability, and making sure that we're playing our role as a platform technology company that can help light up innovation in many, many different ways. And so what I think a lot about is how we're taking some of these patterns that we're seeing, some of those opportunities for data partnerships, and translating that into technology and solutions that we and our partners can take forward in very specific fundraising scenarios.
Well, now maybe I just add one additional on the program side, John, given that you asked the question. There we're seeing kind of 1,000 flowers bloom, and I'll give you one example of a pretty compelling use case. So we're working with the International Criminal Court, not necessarily a small nonprofit. They are the largest court in the land that prosecutes war crimes, right? Humanitarian war crimes when a state can't or won't do it. And so they're operating in Ukraine. They're operating in many, many different places. And it turns out war crimes are documented. There's a lot of documents, photos, social feeds, videos that need to be analyzed. They need to be associated to create a chain of evidence and match a person to a place, to a thing, to help build up cases. And we're deploying Azure Cognitive Services in partnership with the International Criminal Court to do just that. and it's shrinking the time for investigations dramatically. What that results in is prosecution, right? And what that results in is justice faster for those that have been, you know, been victims of war crimes.
I mean, that was probably the most perfect example. And I mean, war is very heavy on all of our hearts right now. We're all thinking about it. And I do think that what an incredible use case. And I'm also sitting in a space of gratitude that you, that Microsoft, that individuals like yourselves are doing this work and making those connections. Because Eric, you said the phrase that scares all of us in nonprofit, which is adjust rapidly. And that is not our skill set, you know, trying to move quickly. And yet we find ourselves standing in this world right now that is largely new for so many that were either maybe tech averse or were didn't have time or resources for it. So I thank you for really trying to help accelerate us forward. And I want you to kind of talk about like the key challenges that you all are seeing nonprofits are facing, like with their fundraising today, and how are you seeing AI, you know, uniquely positioned to address those challenges? Love your example, Justin. But any other examples that you think can kind of take on how we can overcome any of these challenges would be so helpful.
Yeah. So really, really specifically, a couple pieces of technology that we're working on. One is a likelihood to donate model. And so working with nonprofit organizations, the fundraising data that they have today, what are some of the giving patterns that individual donors have? Is there seasonality there? Is there cause alignment for certain individuals? Do they have networks? How do they give? And then scoring that. And what is the next best ask? What's the likelihood to donate for certain individuals? How do you align then your campaigns to those individuals and get more personalized communications to them for appeals and get more personalized communication back to them that talk about the impact of that donation aligned to what they're telling you and their engagement with your organization? So that's one piece. Back to the interoperability piece, we're also very proud to be a member of the Giving Tuesday Data Commons and working with Giving Tuesday on how do we help platform that data and make that data available in a fundraising solutions. So you can see kind of trends in fundraising and use that as you're developing your campaigns and your approaches.
And I just have one additional thing. I mean, I think, you know, in the nonprofit industry, I think we as a technology community haven't invested enough in kind of the fundamental skills required to, you know, what's this thing called prompt engineering? How do I write prompts to get these outputs that I want? And how do I just fundamentally get started using some of this technology in a way that's going to be really effective, whether my job's a fundraiser or a program delivery person or whatever the function may be, COO, CFO. And there, you know, I think we're focused on fundamental skilling and we have a really great AI learning pathway in LinkedIn that we have 1.4 million people already engaged in right now. It's free of charge. You can go to LinkedIn, look at the Microsoft AI career pathway, and it will teach you about how to think about prompts, how to think about using tools like Bing Chat Enterprise, using these open AI tools in a way that's most appropriate for your job. So sometimes it's just starting with getting skilled up.
It's one of the most important things that I think about why I'm at Microsoft. Why did I leave the nonprofit sector and come here? It's because we think holistically, not just about the technology, but also about the capacity building. When I was at Path, I used to talk about, you know, this, the way technology evolves is a river. Like, it is not going to stop. You know, the innovation, the pace of that change likely is only going to increase. At some point, you have to jump in. If you're waiting for things to slow down so that you can align yourself to a technology that you have more confidence in, it's not the world we're in today. Like, you really need to think about how you're engaging this. And one of the ways that we think about it is we provide a lot of skill and content and a lot of engagement with nonprofit communities and communities in general about how to build that digital literacy.
I mean, y'all are kindred spirits. You're putting the pieces out there for us to pour into. We're a growth mindset oriented community. We talk about the power of just learning the things we don't know. Like, everything is figure outable, especially coming at it with this open hand to what we can figure out. So
I love you're kind of a,
amazing.
Love it so much. Well, I mean, we've talked about the power of this. There's so much still coming at us, but y'all also lean into just responsible use. It's on the forefront of all of our minds in the nonprofit space. Y'all have put together some core principles that guide fairness, accountability, transparency, et cetera. I'd love for you to walk us through some of those. Can you lift some of the most important aspects of this conversation? Because I know it's in there. It's in our minds as we kind of approach this from the nonprofit that are seeking justice and trying to not create more harm in the work that we do.
It's critical. No, I'm glad you brought it up, John. And you know, at Microsoft, in fact, years ago, as we were doing our work on AI, we built a responsible AI framework that has six core principles, as you started to enumerate there: fairness, accountability, transparency. And it, what's important is how they're used in the way that we engineer our product. Not only are they a guide for our engineering work and how we implement AI within customers, but they form the basis of our engineering policies, our standards, and ultimately they flow into the way that we've set up our training, our tools, our testing procedures. And, you know, they're auditable and verifiable. So that these are critical principles. Now, if I took a step back and said, what principle am I most concerned about at the moment? Where do I see the biggest challenge, right? One, having spent a lot of time in the last, I'll just say 6 months in Africa and India and other parts of the global South, I do think the principle of inclusivity and ensuring that we're not widening the digital divide, but we're narrowing the digital divide is a tough problem, right? It's a tough problem. Yeah. And what's really interesting is some of the work that our Microsoft research team is doing on how do we engineer this technology so that it can work effectively in lower resource markets with lower bandwidth, perhaps with more limited budgets, so that the AI needs to be more affordable in the way that we roll it out. And how do we use AI as really a superpower to unlock digital capabilities for those that may not be very digital fluent? And one of those superpowers is language, right? Being able to interact through local language with a computing system and get what you need, whether you're making a payment, whether you're filing for a property permit, whether you're getting information on your farm, right, and the soil conditions and what you need to plant, and being able to do that in what we would call lower resource languages, so things like Swahili or other languages around the world, I think could be a real game changer. And our MSR, our Microsoft research team, is working hard on these problems to ensure that not only does AI support us here in Redmond and Seattle, but it's actually helping narrow that digital divide in the global South. And we have a lot of work to do. I'll be honest with you. We have a lot of work to do, but it's something that we're very focused on.
I would maybe add a couple of things to that. One is, you know, principles are great, but they're not really effective if it's just a poster on the wall, right? And so we, first of all, yes, all of the principles that we have are embedded into how any engineering team at Microsoft does its work. And we all have to go through audit and compliance to ensure that any solution that is using any of our Copilot resources or any OpenAI components are adherent to that policy. But it's not just us. We provide the guidance and the toolkits for any technology partner, any organization, any nonprofit organization or for-profit organization, to adopt those same principles and have guidance for how you incorporate it into your own organization. We think about it, especially in how we think about, you know, the effect of how we train these models for vulnerable populations, for example. And so, you know, it's not just a language component, but also from a privacy and security layer, like how, as an organization working with vulnerable populations, can you trust an LLM? How can you trust, you know, GPTs using your data? And make sure that we have the transparency and control that organizations want to be able to combine their own organizational private data together with a well-trained large language model and, you know, really get the best results as you combine those two things without, you know, exposing the data for the populations that you serve.
Justin, Eric, I like you so much. You guys get it. I mean, it is true when you talk about, we could have these ethical principles, we could put them on a poster, we could, you know, rah-rah at our team meeting. But when you bring it back to the human who's actually trying to connect, I'm going to share a story from somebody within our community. We have an incredible community member. He is in rural Uganda. Hi, Simon. And he has this incredible organization that provides microfinance loans to women in rural Uganda. And you can imagine how far $100 could go for a woman in one of those communities. We have been working like mad to try to get a giving platform up so he could accept credit cards. We have worked to get him a new laptop because he hasn't had one in 15 years. You know, small changes like this, not only do they transform his nonprofit, it transforms the community. It transforms connectivity. It brings not just resources in, but it opens the world. And we have such a heart for Haiti, and you think about the infrastructure in a marginalized population by that. But even in the United States, I mean, we have trafficking organizations and hunger organizations, and you get so mired in helping the beneficiary on the front line that you kind of forget to prioritize these things without thinking this is the long game. This is going to help you play the long game in every possible way. So thank you for living and seeing humans, you know, in this work. We think ethical storytelling and ethical, just really walking with intentionality through what we do, giving dignity and all we do, is the best way that we can show up and serve. So I want to talk a little bit about, you mentioned vulnerable populations and how data can be trained, because we know that there's going to be biases, you know, that are going to be surfacing. And how do we address that? How do we use data to address something that we still want to be so ethically sound, and so we're really centering that dignity for all human people? Would love either one of you to take that.
Yeah. So from a training perspective, it starts with understanding what some of the concerns are, making sure that we're entering the conversation, recognizing that we're not A, the only player, and B, we have a lot to learn from the organizations that are on the ground delivering these services. So how do we effectively work with United Nations missions? How do we work with humanitarian, you know, global humanitarian organizations? How do we work with the small health and human services organizations in urban environments? You know, part of this is, large language models are trained on data that's publicly accessible on the internet. How are you managing your data? And, you know, ensure that you've got the right practices inside your organization. So first and foremost, you're not exposing the data for potential consumption by any, you know, LLM that's there.
Right.
But understand, you know, the engagement between how an LLM is trained, large language model is trained, like GPT, and how you use your own organizational data. And so what we're working on are ways that, you know, where these generic models are trained and how they're applicable in specific scenarios, you know, be they nonprofit scenarios or other industry scenarios, and how you combine your own organizational data with the trained model in ways that give you the richness that allow you to then either drive more, you know, directed program impact or whatever it is, right? And so, you know, we're in the, as Justin was saying, we're in this hype cycle where we have a lot of fear on one side, and a lot of hope on the other side. And we're, you know, let's worry wisely about the fear, and let's hope appropriately on what some of the promises are. And let's really focus on what are some of the practical solutions that help how organizations are thinking about how they adopt the technology and help us as a major technology player learn what we need to learn to ensure that, you know, where we are seeing biases, we could help, you know, tune and adjust. Where we see the opportunity for creating maybe different approaches for large language models, as Justin was talking about, for lower resource settings, that, you know, we can make our investments wisely.
Yeah, the only thing I just add to that is we often say at Microsoft, you'll hear us around the halls talking about how Microsoft is built on trust. And, you know, honestly, when I look at all of the other partners out there, technology providers, I do think one of the ways that we differentiate ourselves is the business model that we have, and we hope that business model engenders trust, both in the way that we talk about the principles we use in building AI, the way I was just articulating, the way we're trying to tackle problems of inclusion for languages in the Global South, but also the way we give organizations control over how their data is used, buy these models, right? Full control.
Oh, thank you.
Right? Full control. And that is just, I think, critical so that organizations have choices that they can make to use these models in the most appropriate ways.
Love that. Well, I mean, I'm feeling the need to transition to activation. I mean, we've heard a lot of really great talk about how this translates, but I want to get active and put this into practice. A lot of people listening are wanting to implement new technologies, but we know it's going to come with challenges. We've addressed the big elephant in the room. We have to have a growth mindset. So that's table stakes here. But what are some other challenges they nonprofits could face when adopting AI? What have y'all seen specifically for maybe fundraising, and how can they overcome these hurdles?
Well, I think, and then Eric, we'll just riff on this one together. I think one of the questions is like, how do I even get started? Like, how do I get into gear, like on anything?
Right.
And let's start simply, right? Let's start simply, which is number one, let's figure out what are the resources that we can deploy to help build that knowledge. That Career Essentials on Generative AI is a 4-hour course. You can take it. It's a great course as an example. And that will equip you with the fundamental kind of language and knowledge. And it helped me actually figure out how to write prompts that were getting better outputs and for the work I was doing. Whether you're trying to write a fundraising proposal or analyzing a grant, it'll be helpful. The second thing is just get started. Just start using it, right? And when we think about the easiest way to start getting power out of these tools, you know, any organization that's running Microsoft 365 has access to Bing Chat Enterprise. Now, what is Bing Chat Enterprise? It's Bing Chat with all of the enterprise security and controls that you would want to use inside of an organization. And it's freely available. And so getting people starting to use Bing Chat Enterprise for writing a grant proposal, for analyzing a fundraising plan is just a great starting point. It's low friction. You don't need IT to implement anything. You just get started.
Holla.
Yeah, that's important, right?
No offense, guys.
Well, you know, one important point is of the 325,000 organizations that we serve, like 320,000 of them are about 7 people or less. I mean, lot of community-based organizations with small teams where the IT person is also the fundraising person as well as the managing director, right? We got to be really honest about making it easy to use this technology. And that is the next easiest step. The third step, right, if we were to then try to get to more advanced levels, right, is, all right, how do we start using some of these low-code, no-code platforms like Power Platform, which, again, don't require coding experience, don't require deep technology skills. They do require skills and some knowledge, and we've got good training on that. But you can set up things like Power Virtual Agents to help beneficiaries as they engage your organization get routed in a much more effective way to the services that they may need in your organization, or get information in a self-service way that doesn't feel like one of those old, you know, phone trees that you dial into with a bank that drives you crazy, right? It's much more intelligent than that. I think one of the most powerful tools for small organizations, small nonprofits, is going to be the Microsoft Office Copilot. Now, today, there's a 300-seat limitation. We're working on bringing that down, right? We're doing that work. But if you think about what is the number one fundraising system, what's the number one accounting system, what's the number one HR management system in the world, it's probably Excel. And bringing intelligence across all of your documents, all of your email, all of your systems that you're running in Excel for your smaller organization, that is going to be a game changer. And so training, get started with Bing Chat Enterprise, and then we can start to step into some of these more advanced tools is a great way for organizations to get into gear and start getting value out of this.
I'll give maybe a few really specific examples about, like, if you're sitting at a computer right now and bring up a browser, what you can do. So we have a really simple demo where you can go to a Bing Chat Enterprise and enter a prompt like, as an executive director for a food bank in a community, I need to organize a food drive for Thanksgiving. Write me an appeal letter, and you will get a first draft of an appeal letter. Is it perfect? No, probably not. But it's a great place to start. So you're not sitting there looking at a blank piece of paper. How do I create this artifact? Another example on what Justin was saying around Power Virtual Agent. If you're an organization that has an FAQ or has an annual report, you can load that FAQ or load that annual report into Power Virtual Agent. It takes about 10 or 15 minutes to go through the whole process. And now you have a chat bot that can answer questions about your annual report, or you'll have an interactive chat bot for your FAQ. We've tried really hard to make really easy access for some of the most common challenges that organizations are having. And what we're seeing, without having Copilot, really in the market quite yet. I was talking with a family foundation based here in the Northwest. They have an annual proposal drive. They finished their funding cycle 4 months earlier this year because the quality of the proposals were and the amount of proposals were coming in so quickly. And it was because organizations were using ChatGPT to write the proposals. So pointing ChatGPT at your proposal library, looking at the RFP, write me a proposal based on what we've done before and what's been successful, and it will give you a first draft of a proposal response. So we're already seeing kind of some of these really practical use cases where people are experimenting with the technology. So as Justin said, the capacity building is essential, and you've got access to these tools today.
Now, Becky and John, I've got a question for you. Are you using...
I'm nervous.
I know. Are you using any of these GPT-powered tools for any of the work that you're doing, and what are you finding?
Heck yes. We have to. There's just too much going on. And I mean, I was telling the story the other day. I mean, I even got ChatGPT out for my attorney husband the other day, who had never used it, and asked for certain case law with precedent on this certain topic in Oklahoma and his mind was completely blown. And I just think that, once you use these tools, the friction, just the more you use them, the friction just kind of, I don't want to say it goes away, but it minimizes significantly. And I really appreciate what you've been saying, like Eric, your example, because I can assure you program officers everywhere at foundations are cheering, because it's really taken a lot of what is a manual process out, and we're able to streamline this. And I want to use streamline as a way to say streamline means efficiency. Streamline means that we get to move faster in our missions. It means that we get to adjust quickly. And so I think that this is only going to help boost us. I'm on the hopeful side of AI. I actually think that it's going to bring, I hope that it brings more ease, because one of the things that I worry about so much with nonprofit is just the amount of tactics and work that we have to carry with so little resources. The mental health, you bring up mental health, Justin. I mean, we are a very sick sector right now in compassion fatigue and burnout. And I think that these tools are an absolute lifeline to us to not only work smarter, but be it more efficient, find the right people. We're talking about prompts. Like, we're geeking out about the prompt thing. That is total idiot proof. I want that, and give me what the data is telling me. So I just celebrate what you all have done on the Tech for Social Impact side. And I just want anyone listening to just feel like, do a 1% shift. That's what we say in here. Pick one thing, try it out, do one a week. Once that gets comfortable, do one a day, start getting in flow of this, share what you know, because we think that we're going to fail forward, but we're going to fail faster together. So I really just appreciate Microsoft taking a really big lens on this. And we want to make sure that we're creating space to say, where can nonprofits get these resources? Where's the best place that we could connect them up?
Yeah, I think a couple of places. One place is for that training. I think LinkedIn is a great location. So if you go to LinkedIn and you type in look at the Microsoft LinkedIn AI career pathway, it is a great, great, great training resource. So start there. That's the first thing. Second thing is to get access to the technology that we were talking about. Go to Microsoft.com/nonprofit. And that will bring you to all of the resources that you need to get assets. And then, of course, within that is also local partners that you can work with to enable what you need to enable. You know, one thing you mentioned though, Becky, I wanted to highlight was, you know, if you were to say, hey, what is the next killer feature? Like, what is the next thing?
I do want to know that.
Well, you know what it is? I think it's ubiquity. I think it is the fact that in everything you do, whether it's donor retention, campaigns, event design, it's going to be built into the tools kind of by default. And there's a really important principle that we think about as we do this, and that is that it's about creating a smarter, more efficient nonprofit leaders. It's not about replacing, right? It's about being the co-pilot, a ubiquitous co-pilot in every single activity that you do that helps you just do it faster, more efficiently, more effectively, so that you can unleash your creativity to solve the problems that you're trying to solve in your communities. And that's why we named every one of our technologies co-pilot, because we think they're an assistant to human ingenuity, not replacing human ingenuity.
The only thing I would add to that, Justin, is how we are increasingly thinking about community and the role that Microsoft can play to help create the opportunity for nonprofits to talk about the application of this technology and what they need to learn and how it's working for them, and how we and the partners that we work with, the technology partners that we work with, can engage more effectively. So we're really leaning in to create space for an additional nonprofit community that is thinking about the application of AI.
And we're launching that community, I'll say. We're launching a new online community platform at the end of January. So you'll see us roll that out, which will be a virtual space where nonprofits can go engage in topics, talk about these things. We'll have experts on standby to make sure that we're providing input to those communities so that nonprofits can support nonprofits and we can be part of that process too.
So cool. Community is everything. I was going to say that too. That's one of our values around here. So, I mean, you're bringing up the heart of all of this. Like, the humanity is the piece that's not going to be replicated. We're going to have a lot more ease with AI, but like the core of why we do what we do, the human interaction, this transformation that happens with people, the person, I want to give y'all space to talk about a moment of philanthropy that's happened to you in your life. We celebrate it on the daily. We feel like these are the moments that are sometimes small, but they stick with us in our life. I'd kick it to you, Eric, to take us back to one of those times.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will tell you about the first time I went to Africa when I was a new employee at PATH. PATH is a large global health organization, and it works in vaccine development, vaccine delivery, medical device technology, and was running an HIV/AIDS clinic in rural Western Kenya in Kakamega. And so you spend 6 years flying to Nairobi, and then you fly to Kisumu, and then you get in a jeep and you drive to Kakamega, and really amazing experience. And I was touring the clinic there. And at the end of the tour, the doctor took me aside, brought me into his office, where there was an elderly computer.
I did not expect that.
He had an Access Form app that they used to order medications for the clinic from the central store in Nairobi. And there was a new medication he knew was available, but it wasn't available in the application. And his simple question was, how do I add it? So in this situation, for organizations that are grant-funded organizations working in technology, you'll recognize some of this as pilotitis, right? Every grant and every program resulted in a small point of service application that didn't connect to anything else. There weren't data standards. There wasn't interoperability. What was this application? If you were a doctor or a nurse in this clinic, you had two phones and five apps, and you were working with one individual and doing your survey. Okay, we're asking malaria questions. I go into this survey tool and this phone, and now we're talking about HIV/AIDS, and it's this phone and this survey. So I became really passionate about the intersection of digital technology and the nonprofit sector, and what role companies like Microsoft and others could play to contribute to the solution to that problem, really thinking about the beneficiary, the center of the modeling, and how everything in terms of service delivery kind of needs to result from there. How do we build common data model for nonprofits and make that available open source for any technology partner to use? And make sure that's informed by nonprofits and philanthropy organizations. Make sure that we're building on top of that. Make sure that our architecture is open and we're open to partnering with other kinds of organizations, that we focus on data and data interoperability. So yeah, it really became kind of core to me on how I engaged when I was in the nonprofit sector, and a big reason why I came to join Microsoft.
Good luck topping that,
yeah,
Justin.
It's a different story, and I think a couple of years back, you guys will remember that there was severe flooding in the Midwest, and you may know of a nonprofit called Team Rubicon.
We love Team Rubicon.
So, as you may have seen in my bio, I'm a Marine, on Team Rubicon, it's a lot of former service members, and what they say is kick butt civilians too. They go out and work, you know, in areas that need support. And we deployed out with the Team Rubicon team to the Midwest that was absolutely devastated by these floods. These houses were overcome with mud and water and dry and mildew, and they were uninhabitable. And so I spent the day on the ground with the Team Rubicon team, what they called mucking out a house. And so that's with the shovel clearing debris and mud all day long. Relatively simple, relatively straightforward. And by the end of the day, we had one of the houses in much better shape, but nobody was in it. And as we were cleaning up and wrapping up for the day, the family had made it through kind of the barriers that the law enforcement had put up and got back to their home. And they just broke down, you know, when they saw our work and kind of the state of their house and the fact that they were going to be able to move back into it. And it just reinforced to me, you know, what was a relatively small act of service can make such a huge difference in somebody's life. And to see that, to feel that, to see the gratitude of that family and their emotion as they were coming back into their home was just a reminder to me of why we do what we do. You know, there are over a million organizations in the United States doing small and large acts of service every single day, just like that. So it's multiplied by a million or more. And if we, in our work, can make those organizations just 1% more efficient, to your point, John, I'd like to make them a lot more than 1% more efficient, but just 1% more efficient, we'll have helped a lot of people. We'll have been a part of helping a lot of people and enabling this great industry here and around the world. So
you guys are such good dudes. I'm not kidding. I just think sometimes we can gloss over the veneer of things just because, you know, you have these big titles, you know, you work at this massive company that is one of the most, you know, well-known brands in the world. But at the end of the day, it's about humanity. It's about looking that person in the eye and saying, you know, it was my pleasure to be here to muck out and give you space to come back in. It was my pleasure to be able to put that, you know, prescription in so that you don't have to suffer from whatever it is that you're suffering. And I just think if we can all embrace this, we all can do something sort of mentality, then that's, you used the word generative before, that's generative to the world. And so I just am sitting here with a heart full of gratitude, feeling like Justin and Eric have got Tech for Social Impact in such good hands. And we kind of wind down all of our conversations with a one good thing. And it could be a piece of advice, maybe a life hack. What would be your one good thing?
Okay. Well, John already said it. In fact, my thing would be growth mindset. You know, when all of the nonprofits listening to this, when they look at the challenges they're trying to solve in their community, they are hard. And doing anything hard or big, the default setting is challenge and setback. That's the default setting, right? And so kind of the ability to keep the energy, to keep learning, to keep the faith, to take one step forward, even if you have to take one step back and take another step forward, that resilience is all encapsulated in this idea of growth mindset. And I think it's just such a critical attribute for us in this ever-changing and what feels like a much more volatile world to keep front and center in the way that we work.
So I'm a systems guy. So I like catch that growth mindset, like change.
That's why you're so good together.
Kaizen.
You know, this kind of change, that this effort, think about it. Think about how do you need to train your staff? How do you need to train yourself? How do you introduce these concepts into your organization? How is it going to impact your donors? And you know, quick example there, again, back to how an organization was quickly using ChatGPT, where a fundraising officer, her native language wasn't English, and she was started using ChatGPT in the donor communications, and the donors were coming back and saying, did you hire someone new? And no, it was that, you know, it gave this fundraising officer so much more confidence to be able, you know, to engage with the donors. But, you know, that kind of change at how you think about introducing these concepts does take some conscious effort and change management within your organization.
Incredible.
I mean, way to round this out, fellas. This has been such a delight of a conversation. I want to give y'all a chance to say, how can people best connect with you, follow your work, and then connect us up against this free resources and all the good that Microsoft's putting out there.
Yeah, no, I think the best way is probably LinkedIn. So you can find me, Justin Spalhaug, and you can find Eric Arnold, who's prolific on LinkedIn, and connect with us. We'd love to do that. And then again, on LinkedIn, we again have that generative AI learning pathway. Look that up. It's a 4-hour course. You can take the first 4 minutes or all of it. And then again, at Microsoft.com/nonprofits is where you'll find all of the resources available to you. So those would be the main areas.
Eric, Justin, you have done Barbara and Terry so proud today. Oh. And every day as you work and walk through this life in the way that you do. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for just the way you have poured into this community. We will see you over in your community and your platform at the end of January. It'll be exciting. Thank you for your input.
Thank you, friends.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here, friends. And you probably hear it in our voices, but we love connecting you with the most innovative people to help you achieve more for your mission than ever before.
We'd love for you to come join our good community. It's free, and you can think of it as the after party to each podcast episode. Sign up today at weareforgood.com/hello.
And one more thing, if you love what you heard today, would you mind leaving us a podcast rating and review? It means the world to us, and your support helps more people find this community. Thanks so much, friends. Can't wait to our next conversation. Rabbit fans have always powered the We Are For Good podcast, but now Rabbit fans can get even more goodness and access by joining Good Friends. It's our listener support community for the We Are For Good podcast.
Good Friends comes with perks, exclusive episodes with John and I, including The Good Brief, our new monthly cliff notes of the greatest takeaways and lessons learned from that month, and exclusive AMA episodes where we answer your burning questions and tap our community of experts. Join now or learn more at weareforgood.com/friends.
We can't wait to see you inside. That's weareforgood.com/friends.